Karen, I can't tell you how good it is to have you back. Thank you. Thank you. I am shocked to hear you say that you're still seeking control, though. I know. Who among us is still seeking control? Please, show of pinkies in case you're shy about mentioning that. Yes. All right. So I'm going to do an introduction for our wonderful guest today, who I will be interviewing in just a moment. And her name is Alicia Doyle. Some of you may know of her. I met her, I think, around 2010 when she was a good news journalist for the VC Star. I remember texting Alicia when I was visiting North Carolina about one of our animal blessings, and that was in 2011, so I know that she was working with us then, and she covered many, many events for us in a very generous fashion. In fact, many of you know that Nipun Mehta, who's up in the choir loft somewhere, he's right there next to the cycle bunny, right? Behind Mr. Rogers, he's been a tremendous influence in our center, and I believe that Alicia was part of making that happen through the wonderful article that she wrote about his visit. So I knew Alicia through text and email, and then I met her in person when we had Dr. Amit Goswami, who's a quantum physicist known for What the Bleep Do We Know, that movie, among other things. He came to speak at our center, and I invited Alicia to join us, and I met her, and she seemed very gentle and kind and very sweet. Not that she isn't, but I was shocked when I found out very recently that she was doing a book signing for her book, Fighting Chance, where she talked about her life as a professional boxer. And I thought, who is this Alicia Doyle? Is she like mild-mannered Clark Kent reporter who suddenly rips off the disguise and becomes a boxer? Possibly. It turns out that the gentle, good news reporter is also a fierce boxer. And she'll tell you the story. I'll let her tell you the story of how she got there. But I do want to go over some of her credentials before she comes on stage, because she's probably too modest to talk about all of this. She's an award-winning journalist, and she discovered boxing at age 28 in the late 1990s when she went on assignment at a boxing gym for at-risk youth called Kid Gloves. For 2 years, she worked simultaneously as a newspaper reporter while training and competing as a boxer. One of only a few hundred women in America who infiltrated the male-dominated sport. During her boxing career, she won 2 Golden Gloves championship titles and earned 3 wins by knockout. Yeah. Her pro debut at age 30 in the year 2000 was named the California Female Fight of the Year. And her book, Fighting Chance, offers an inside look at what's considered the toughest sport known to man. And I loved her book. I don't follow boxing, but her book offered me so much spiritual wisdom that I can't recommend it highly enough. So let's give some Ventura love to Alicia as she comes to the stage. Recognize the song? Yes, I'm sure you do. Yeah, so it's so good to see you.
Thank you, Bonnie. I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you. Can you all hear Alicia?
No.
Okay.
Testing, 1, 2.
Uh-oh. Let's do it again.
Testing, 1, 2.
Yeah, there you go. You may have to speak up a little.
Testing.
Pretend you're in a fighting ring and you...
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Okay, good. Good. Okay, so I'll just keep reminding you to speak up, and Kenny can crank it up too. Okay. It's a little far from your mouth. No, she's on. Kenny, let's say something again.
Testing, 1, 2.
Is she on, Ken? Uh-oh. Okay, I need to dig in your top, okay? Hope you don't mind. Say what? Orange to green. Yeah, this is G-rated. I don't know how this thing works. On the top. No, it's not going to work. Let's give you can we give her the singer's mic? How's that? Is that all right with you?
Yeah.
Okay. We can take this little stinker off. Now, it worked in the sound check, just so I tell you. Okay. How do you like the presentation so far?
It's very exciting.
There you go. Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, let's put the Rocky theme back on. There you go.
Thank you very
okay,
much.
Now let me not trip, okay?
Okay,
I got to get
thing.
Over this. Okay, thank you.
We did it.
We did it. Yay. If I tripped, I could have said Alicia Doyle beat me up.
Oh,
that be fun?
Yeah. Is that better? Can you hear me better?
Oh, much better. Yay.
Thank
woo-hoo.
You.
You're
everybody.
There. Okay. I'm glad we straightened all that out, actually. It's much better to work with good equipment versus just struggling through. So anyway, when we talked, and in your book, you mentioned that you have a metaphysical background. And can you tell us a little bit about what that was?
Yes. So I credit my metaphysical background to a lot of the things I've accomplished. But when I got into the church, or I should say my mother forced me to go to church, the metaphysical church, it was called the Science of Mind. It's in Colorado. It's still there. And so she would go to church, and she enrolled me into the youth classes, and I didn't want to go to those either, but I went because I was 12. So now, of course, as an adult looking back, I mean, in those classes, you know, we were children, but we learned a lot of fun things, you know, how to read each other's auras, and similar to the teachings here for the youths here, but I didn't understand at the time that it was really going to benefit my life in tremendous ways, and it's carried its way to me through my journey at this point. So
that's awesome. So that was at Mile High in Colorado?
Yes.
Yeah, so
yes.
that's one of the biggest churches in the movement. And it's so gratifying to hear you say that when we had these kids sitting on the stage, because the kids have been, you know, coming back slowly, and you know, we always talk about planting seeds in this church, and just think what seeds are planted. They may not even know that these seeds of grace are being planted, but then they go and live a life, become a boxer, become an award-winning journalist, whatever it is they choose to do, but these seeds continue to flourish, right?
Absolutely, and, yeah. And I just remember the people I grew up around, the adults I grew up around, they were very youthful adults. I mean, that's all I knew.
Yeah.
So, you know, even the minister of the church, when I moved forward with the metaphysical church, you know, she was in her 80s, 90s, very youthful. So
yeah.
That really stuck with me, kind of like, what was it about these people and their energy that made them so youthful? So I carried that on throughout my life. And I largely thank the metaphysical church for that. Absolutely.
That's lovely. Yeah. I often get called immature, so I appreciate youthful. That's really nice. So you were working as a journalist, mm-hmm. and what inspired you to start boxing, of all things?
Yes, so that is the million-dollar baby question.
Woohoo!
How I found boxing, or shall I say how boxing found me, and I do not believe it was coincidence at all. I was working alone in the newsroom one night. The phone rang. I answered it because I was the only one there. It was a community activist wanting coverage for a boxing gym called Kid Gloves that was destroyed by El Nino rains in the 90s. And this gym is for really troubled youth, very emotionally traumatized youth. They really needed this boxing gym as a place to go where they received unconditional love. So that tugged at my heart a bit, because before I went on this assignment, I used to view boxing as the dark side. I used to view it as a very violent sport. I didn't understand the beauty of the sport. So that said, what piqued my interest about this story was I couldn't understand why this gym was so valuable to these children. What it did for them, why and how it made them better people. So that really piqued my interest. The first interview I did with the owner of the gym, and met a lot of coaches and trainers and other boxers. These are some of the greatest gentlemen I've ever met in my life, with the biggest hearts, and that touched me as well. I'm thinking, how could something that I viewed as so dark and so violent be so beautiful? There was something about it. So I ended up writing about that gym for about a year, and they ended up reopening, but I still had not put on a pair of boxing gloves, not yet. That came later.
Uh-huh. So what got you to put on a pair of boxing gloves?
Yes, so I went through a really bad breakup, which I'm sure some people are familiar with.
Anybody?
So this boy, he punched me in the face a couple of times. And needless to say, I was pretty angry about that. So the next day, I just wanted to hit something as hard as I could over and over again. I was so angry. I was so ashamed. I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed that I allowed this to happen to me. So I went to the boxing gym, and I took an aerobic boxing class and hit that heavy bag for a half an hour, and all I knew was that I felt better. I just, in that hour, and it was so, probably because the workout was so bloody hard that I couldn't think about anything else, but that really stuck with me. It was like, okay, if I do this for an hour, I will feel better. So I went back the next day, and the next day, and the next day. And that went on for several months, and before I knew it, I was taking two or three of these classes back to back, 6 days a week. That's how much anger and rage I had inside. I didn't realize at the time that I was just starting to scratch the surface of everything that was inside of me, all the rage that I had carried for so many years. And for whatever reason, I do believe the universe brought boxing to me because God knew that it was something that would help heal me.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you. You know, and what I love about that story, it's making me a little emotional, is, don't you start? Okay. Yeah. So just that, you know, the reading that Hugh did was so much about opposites and darkness, and that we want to make the darkness wrong somehow, or what we perceive as darkness wrong. And yet, in your life circumstances, you were brought to the moving center. You know, we talk about three centers, the intellectual, the heart, and the moving center. You were brought to actually reconcile the darkness through your body. I mean, certainly the darkness had touched your emotions and your mind, but you reconciled it through the work of your body, which is so beautiful to me, just so beautiful.
Wow, thank you very much. I never heard it put that way, but that makes perfect sense.
Thank you. I never heard it put that way either. It just came to me. So. Yeah, but it's beautiful that the process, and that you can name it in hindsight, that you can name what it was. I mean, just think how many lives that blesses, you know, and blesses in your book as well. It's wonderful. Yeah.
And thank you very much. I really appreciate that. And I need to put out there that it only took me 20 years to write my book. And the reason why, because I retired from fighting in the year 2000 when I was 30 years old, and I was approached at the time by a producer. Hollywood wanted to make a movie, and I'll never forget it. They said, you know, we would love to do a movie, but we need something written. Uh-huh. Would you like to help us write it? And I said no. And the reason why, because I thought, I don't want everybody knowing about what happened to me, all the darkness, all the pain, all the things I'm ashamed of and embarrassed of. But then I realized if I was not willing to be vulnerable, then I would not be connected to everybody in the world.
Yes.
Vulnerability is the one thing we all shared. That's why I had to be vulnerable and just let the chips fall where they may. And I'm very happy that it's been received very well. But,
yes,
you know, in that darkness, you're talking about, yes, the darkness. My journey in boxing, it brought it all back up. All the stuff that I thought I'd gotten rid of, boxing brought it all back up. And through that journey, and I didn't even discover this until after I retired, was that I had to embrace and love my darkness.
Yes.
I had to love, I call them the heartbreak pieces in my book.
Yeah.
We all have these heartbreak pieces, pieces that we want to really just throw away, but they belong in our puzzle. They're some of the most important pieces we can have in our puzzle, because that's what makes us who we are.
Yes, I think that's part of the power of what we teach here. I don't know if all metaphysical teachers, churches or centers teach this, and I think sometimes we tend to squish the darkness away and pretend it doesn't exist. And I think that so much of the power of what we're teaching here is that you bring the darkness to the light. You know, Brené Brown talks about how shame thrives on secrecy. So everything that we're ashamed of, if it's brought to the light, it can be transformed and transmuted. And the other thing that I just love about what you said is that you're vulnerable. You're a vulnerable boxer, Alicia, which is awesome. You don't necessarily hear those two words together, but that is a powerful, powerful metaphor for everybody. Because your book is not only about boxing, it's about everything. It's about all of us, really. You know, about whatever we're fighting. And we're going to get to that part in a minute. But I want to first hear about how you made the leap from you're in your classes, you're punching at a bag. How did you get to punching actual people
and
and becoming a professional?
Yeah, so I was in the boxing gym training pretty hard all by myself. I'd often go off on my own because the aerobic boxing classes, they weren't enough. I wanted more. So I just started to watch the trainers and the coaches and the boxers and their exercise regimen, and I started to just mimic it and copy it, and I would do it. I taught myself how to hit the speed bag, that really cool thing, and all these other equipment in the gym. So other coaches from other gyms started to notice, because there weren't a whole lot of women boxing at the time. I think I was one of about 600 at the time who were boxing competitively in the United States. So I stood out in that gym. There weren't a whole lot of girls there. And that's when a gentleman named Stan Ward, who sadly passed away, went to heaven during COVID. He approached me and said, have you ever thought about boxing competitively? And I said, well, I have entertained the idea, but nobody will take me seriously because I'm a girl. And that's when he was telling me that women's boxing was getting huge, that I could be a part of something really big. Women we are still fighting for equality in the sport. Women are not paid as much as the men. There's things we're still working on. But he thought that I would be a good role model in the sport as a female. And so I took him on, and I started doing it and started training at some of the hardest boxing gyms in Southern California, and that's really how it started.
So what was it like the first time you had to actually do a competitive boxing match with a person?
It's terrifying.
It's, I can imagine. And was she bigger than you?
No, she was a teenager.
Oh.
And this is because I started boxing at 28 years old. That's considered late for athletics, okay? And what's fantastic about boxing is there's really no age discrimination. You have people, men, competing in their 50s. So my first match was against a woman named Layla McCarter, who is still in my life today. She's a wonderful woman. But I want to say she was 16. And this is another thing I learned that day was never underestimate your opponent. Because I was training hard. I had dropped all this weight. I was really yoked and ripped. And she wasn't as ripped up as me. So I just assumed she wasn't going to win, that she hadn't been training. And she showed up late that day. I didn't even think I was going to fight until she walked in late. And I was like, oh, no, I'm going to have to fight today. And it's all in the book. I remember every fight like it was yesterday, so yeah. I take the reader into every single fight. That match was supposed to be an exhibition, which really means like it's not a real fight. This was a real fight. I found out like right before I stepped in the ring that she was a kickboxing champ. Great. So I got a standing eight in the first round, and if you don't know what that is, if you're a little familiar with boxing, when they stop the fight because one boxer is in danger of getting knocked out or killed, they're going to give him a standing eight.
And you were the one who's getting killed?
I was the one, yeah. They stopped the fight.
Okay.
They stopped the fight because my coach could tell I couldn't handle it, and they sent Layla back to her corner. I got the standing eight count, and those 8 seconds, I had to decide if I wanted to go on or if I wanted to walk out, and I wanted to leave. I wanted to walk out and go home and cry, but all these people were watching me, and people from rival gyms were watching and wanting to get me beat up, and my pride took over in that moment. I stayed, and I finished the round. I finished all three rounds. She kicked my butt in all three rounds, but it was a fantastic lesson and a fantastic fight, and... she's an 8-time world champion today, this woman, Layla.
Wow.
So.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, when we talked on the phone, and I want to talk a little bit about the difference between winning and losing. This wasn't on your list, but when we talked on the phone, you talked about how what it feels like to lose and what it feels like to win. Can you say a little bit about that to us?
Oh, sure. Well, winning a boxing match, there's nothing like it in the world. It's the most exhilarating feeling in the world that I have felt in my life at this point. But I took my losses very hard. I did not win every fight. And I had to explore why I took them so hard as well, and that's in my book, too. I would find a room on site and be alone and would sob my eyes out. Even though I would go through all the rounds and be in the fight and finish the fight, I couldn't appreciate that for myself. A lot of the praise came from my opponents and these women and all my coaches, you know, who were constantly telling me, look, you got in there, you're a winner because you showed up. I didn't understand what that meant at the time. Now I get it. You know, if you just show up for things, you know, you are a winner. And there's really no such thing as winning and losing anyway.
Right.
You know, I had to discover that. And
right.
I explore that in my book as well.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, it's such a great metaphor for us, because I think probably all of us here have felt like we've lost at something, and how personal that feels and how shameful it feels, and yet it's so much more. And to hear a strong woman who goes into a fighting ring on purpose with, you know, a chance of getting beat up, and to know that it affected you so deeply too, you know. And again, the reconciliation of that is understanding that it's all grist for the mill of becoming. That, you know, we often quote Shakespeare here, because I'm married to a Shakespearean actor, and you know, the uses of adversity are sweet. And like, so what did you learn from losing? Like, what did you learn from when you were really like on the floor and in pain? Was it what you just said about how?
You know, everything, all of it, the entire journey, it was all about self-love. Mm-hmm. I had to learn to love myself. That was it. I had to learn to love myself in a loss, mm-hmm. in what I perceived as embarrassment. Nobody was as hard on me as I was on myself. So the biggest lesson I learned from that journey in boxing was learning to love myself. And that comes to, like, why I retired. That my profile was really rough, and it's in the book. I had to sit back and ask myself why I was deliberately putting myself in an arena of pain. I grew up with a lot of pain. It's all in the book, but by choosing to box, I was the one putting myself in the arena of pain. So I really had to explore why I was punishing myself, beating myself up,
right,
by putting myself in there. And that was a hard dismantling of everything, of all of my parts,
yes,
and all of my dark pieces.
Yes.
And in the end, I had to love myself, and especially the dark pieces.
Yes, yes. I feel you, yeah. You know, and again, what a fantastic metaphor about, okay, so it can seem like there's a really buff kickboxing teenage champion that's about to beat you up, right? And yet, metaphorically speaking, it can seem like some life condition is really buff and much stronger than us and about to beat us up, and yet somehow we're putting ourselves in the ring of pain. And is there a reason that we need to do that? And can there be a little shift in consciousness to either step out of that ring of pain or to be in the ring of pain in a new way, you know? One of the things that you said that I so admired, I've used this, I've plagiarized you like numerous times using this,
that.
But I usually give you credit.
Thank you.
Yeah. I've used it in classes and in sermons, I believe, too, is the idea that when you go into the boxing ring, you're fighting yourself. You're really fighting yourself. Can you say some more about that?
Yeah. And I've thought about that question. It's such a great question. It's a very deep question.
Yeah.
I think that in everything we do, anything that feels like it's there's adversary,
like it's
there,
against us,
that we really are only fighting ourselves. It was really like I was fighting myself because I was one putting myself there. I had to ask myself, why am I putting myself here? What am I supposed to learn from this?
Yeah,
you know, and in doing that, it was a painful dismantling of really looking, taking a deep, hard look at myself.
So I think when we spoke also, you mentioned that you were fighting fear. Is that true? Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah, a lot of course,
yeah,
absolutely. I was fighting afraid. Some boxers, you know, they have a certain mindset where they're excited to get in there and they're ready and they don't have a whole lot of fear. They might be nervous. I was terrified every time before I got in there. That never went away. So
yeah.
I also understood, though, that fear, it was all in my head. It wasn't like tangible, wasn't real right in front of me.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, just a lot of mindfulness getting in there and being afraid while I'm walking in, being afraid while they're counting, you know, down for us to fight. Up to that moment, just knowing, like, this isn't real. It's in my head. Just do your job. That's all you need to do. Just do your best. That's all you need to do. God's got my back. Everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but and it sounds like you're talking about two fears here. It's like the fear, I mean, for me it would be the fear of getting, kicked out of me, but also the fear of failure that you've mentioned before. That's a horrible fear.
Yeah, and then fear of failure. You know, what is that?
Yeah.
And I came to the conclusion that there is no such thing as failure.
There isn't.
And if other people perceive it that way, well, that's their opinion. People are entitled to have their own opinions.
Yeah.
But absolutely nothing. I don't regret anything I've done. I don't look at anything as, I don't believe in mistakes. I believe that I've made certain choices that had certain consequences. And if I didn't like those consequences, I would make a different choice later.
That's your science of mind talking right there.
Yeah. Thank you, Mom.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Yeah, you know, it's one of the things we quote here a lot is that the world is a stage and the men and women upon it, I'm paraphrasing, but the men and women upon it are merely players. And what if the world is a boxing ring and we're all, the men and women within the ring are, you know, we're just players, we're just boxers trying to duke it out with the mirror in front of us, you know, the mirror of fear, the mirror of potential humiliation, or the mirror of wanting to triumph, or whatever mirror we're projecting outwards. You know, that's a famous Rumi quote where he talks about how God says, I can't give you what you already have. It's like bringing spices to the Orient, but I will give you a mirror so that you can know yourself and you can know your life. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, that's
cool.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So you completed boxing, and you were still a journalist, right?
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And one of the things in your book that I found really interesting was the shift in journalism that you made,
mm-hmm,
where you started out being a normal reporter.
Yeah.
And then you shifted to something else. Can you tell us a little bit about
that? So I was a newspaper journalist for about 20 years. I've worked for the Ventura County Star and some of the biggest publications in Southern California. And when I was a young journalist, you know, I was a great journalist. I was great at being a cutthroat journalist, getting all the details that my competition couldn't get, and it gave me a lot of adrenaline. Uh-huh. I was good at it. It was fun. I had a lot of power. But then something changed, and there was an incident, and it's in the book. Something very specific occurred that I just saw myself in this position as a journalist, where I thought that I could do a lot more good. I believe God gave me the gift to write, and I didn't believe I was using it the way that I could have, in the best way. I didn't want to cover negative news anymore. I got tired of covering the murders. These heinous crimes, showing up on crime scenes. It didn't make me feel good writing them, and I knew when people read them that it didn't make them feel good either. And so when I went freelance in 2000, when I retired from boxing, because I only wanted to focus on positive news. I didn't want to be given assignments that I had to do anymore that broke my heart. I only wanted to write about good things and positive people and places, mm-hmm. like the center.
Thank you.
Things that I knew that when people read the stories that it would make them feel good. Mm-hmm. So that was my shift.
Yeah. As I recall, the book, I won't go into the details, but there was a particularly point of integrity, too, that there was a line that you weren't willing to cross,
right.
in terms of invading somebody else's life. And when you decided to stop, to not cross that line, to maintain your integrity with strength and with power, that's when a lot of things shifted for you as well, too, right?
Yes, correct. And, yeah. I don't want to give any spoilers away in the book. But, yeah, that because I remember it was like yesterday. It was a very specific thing that really, like, it was like God held up a mirror to myself. And I saw the ugliness of what I was doing as a journalist. And I thought, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
So I went freelance, and that was a little scary, you know.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I also knew that there's more positive news than bad news. I just knew that for a fact. So I knew I would have an abundance of things to write about. And so it worked out well. I'm very lucky.
I'm so glad. I'm glad for our sake, I'm glad it worked out. And I'm also glad for your sake. You know, it was just wonderful.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit. We need to close pretty soon. But what's your involvement with the gym now, with Kid Gloves?
Yes, so I don't box anymore. I don't want to get hit anymore. So I quit that in 2000.
Uh-huh.
But I am a boxing coach for at-risk youth and young adults and adults at Kid Gloves Boxing. So that's my involvement there. I do personal training, but I'm also a boxing coach. So I brought it full circle. I'm giving back to the gym that gave so much to me, which I'm really grateful for.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. What's the one thing you want us to know? Is there one thing?
Oh,
the
gosh.
Most important thing for us to know.
That every person, that you're all perfect.
Oh.
We're perfect. We're perfect.
Yeah. Thank you. That's so sweet. And is there anything that we can do to support you?
Oh, I'm just so honored to be here. I was trying really hard not to cry because I don't want to mess up my makeup, but I I'm so amazed that I'm here, because I've been thinking about this and visualizing this, and now I'm here. So this stuff works. This teaching, to come back to this church and the teaching that my mother forced me to learn, it's one of the greatest gifts she ever gave me. So I hope you're watching now, Mom. I love you.
Well, thank you so much, Alicia. It's been, I love you.
I love you. You're amazing.
Thank you. And I think we all love you. And we'll see you back there when the service is over. And come by and say hi to Alicia. Purchase a book if you like. She'll sign it for you. And I think we're all set. So let's give her some love, and then we'll pray.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Namaste. Thank you. Thanks so much. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. All right.